Hey everybody, Johnny Storm don't speak. News you're not supposed to speak about. Well, this is ChuckBaldwinLive.com. I've had Chuck on my previous podcast many times. And I have to agree with what he writes here. The U.S.-Israeli attack against Syria and Iran is imminent. Just yesterday, the Zionist puppet Donald Trump threatened Syrian President Assad to not drive the last remnant of terrorists, U.S.-backed terrorists, from his country. With the help of Russia and Iran, Assad has all but totally expunged Western-sponsored terrorist groups, ISIS, al-Nusra, etc., from Syria. The terrorists are now concentrated in the province of Idlib, which has been somewhat of a U.S.-protected terrorist safe zone. Can you imagine anyone telling the president of a country, any country, that he cannot drive out terrorists from his own country? That is exactly what Trump did. Furthermore, what the heck is the U.S. military doing invading a sovereign country and setting up military bases for the express purpose of protecting terrorists, which is exactly what the U.S. military is doing in Syria? Of course, the terrorists are sponsored and supplied by the U.S., Israel, Saudi Arabia, and Great Britain. They are important tools of the warmongering Zionist neocons to the success of their plans to overthrow the governments of Iran and Syria, just as they did in Iraq and Libya. Unless anyone think that all of this has something to do with defending the United States, it doesn't. It has everything to do with enriching the Rothschild Federal Reserve Banks, creating a monopoly for the Western petrodollar, and building the Greater Israel from Benjamin Netanyahu's murdering Zionists. Donald Trump is neck deep in the neocon Zionist war agenda. And that Ahab-esque meeting between Trump and 100 evangelical pastors a week ago Monday was a perfect precursor to galvanizing the support of these groveling, sycophantic Christian Zionists to lead the cheers for Trump's next war. I expect a false flag chemical attack that would be blamed on Assad, followed by massive U.S. missile attacks very soon. What better way to try and salvage an election than going to war with somebody? I also expect Israel to launch a war with Iran in the near future, in which case Iran will have no choice but to defend itself. And when it does, the U.S. will quickly join in on Israel's side. Of course, this is what the Zionists do best, to get America to fight its wars for them. For all intents and purposes, we don't have a U.S. military anymore. Our military is little more than a mercenary army for Zionist Israel. The $64 million question is, what will Russia do? Russia has already amassed a huge fleet of warships in the Mediterranean Sea that is currently engaged in war maneuvers in anticipation of a U.S.-Israel attack on Syria and perhaps Iran. If you have the moral courage to listen to my message last Sunday, I go into detail about the evangelical love fest at the White House a week ago and how it fits into Bible history and the coming war with Syria. And the link is right there. I couldn't agree more. And the $64 million question is, exactly, what will Russia do? They've sat back the last two times. Will they do it this time? Has this all been coordinated in advance? I guess we're going to see. Then another question that, you know, people have, logically so, is how does Israel have so much influence over our government? How can they pretty much just tell Donald Trump and the rest of our government, Congress, the Senate, all of them, excuse me, what to do? Well, for one thing, they control the money supply, which he who rules the gold rules the world, right? The golden rule. Well, here's an interesting article I found from IsraelPalestineNews.org. I never knew this office existed. But apparently, there's an Office of Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, which safeguards Israel's interests. Now, this article starts out by talking about the attack on the Liberty that killed 34 and injured 174, and how our government has still kept that under wraps, and John McCain was one of the biggest defenders of keeping it under wraps. Now, this gets into how Israel gets away with so much. A key component in the Israeli penetration of the U.S. government has been President George W. Bush's 2004 signing off on the creation of the Office of Terrorism and Financial Intelligence, the OTFI, within the Department of the Treasury. Now, this OTFI I'm familiar with because when I was in the car business and I was a finance manager, we had to do OTFI checks. So if you were to come in and buy a car, even with cash, we still had to run an OTFI check on you to make sure that you weren't laundering money by buying cars. Ridiculous, I know, but that's the way it was and still is. So the group's website proclaims that it is responsible for safeguarding the financial system against illicit use and combating rogue nations, terrorist facilitators, weapons of mass destruction proliferators, money launderers, drug kingpins, and other national security threats. But it has from its founding been really all about safeguarding Israel's perceived interests. Grant Smith notes, however, how the secretive office has a special blind spot for major terrorism generators, such as tax-exempt money laundering from the United States into illegal Israeli settlements and proliferation financing and weapons technology smuggling into Israel's clandestine nuclear weapons complex. So there's Stuart Levy. And that was the first head of the office was Undersecretary of Treasury Stuart Levy, who operated secretly within the Treasury itself while also coordinating regularly with both the Israeli government as well as with pro-Israel organizations like AIPAC, WINEP, Foundation for the Defense of Democracies. Excuse me. Levy also traveled regularly to Israel on the taxpayer's dime, as did his three successors in office, David Cohen. Levy left the OTFI in 2011 and was replaced by David Cohen. It was reported then and subsequently that counterterrorism positions at OTFI were all filled by individuals who were both Jewish and Zionist. Cohen continued the Levy tradition of resisting any transparency regarding what the office was up to. Smith reports how on September 12, 2012, he refused to answer reporter questions about Israel's possession of nuclear weapons and whether sanctioning Iran, a signatory to the Treaty on Non-Proliferation of Nuclear Weapons, or its internationally inspected civilian nuclear program was an example of endemic double standards at OTFI. Editor's note, Cohen has been close to Israel advocate Alan Dershowitz and his family from high school. They all run together, folks. Adam Zubin and Sigal Pearl Mandekler, I guess. Cohen was in turn succeeded in 2015 by Adam Zubin, who was then replaced in 2017 by Sigal Pearl Mandelker, there we go, a former and possibly current Israeli citizen. All the heads of the OTFI have therefore been Jewish and Zionist. All work closely with the Israeli government, all travel to Israel frequently on official business, and they are all in close liaison with the Jewish groups most often described as part of the Israel lobby. And the result has been that many victims of the OTFI have been generally enemies of Israel, as defined by Israel, and American Jewish lobbyists. OTFI's Specially Designated Nationals and Blocked Persons List, SDN, which includes sanctions and enforcement options, features many Middle Eastern Muslim and Christian names and companies, but nothing in any way comparable relating to Israel and Israelis, many of whom are well known to law enforcement otherwise as weapons traffickers and money launderers. And once placed on the SDN, there's no transparent way to be removed, even if the entry was clearly an error. Once again, completely unconstitutional, but they do it anyway. Here in the United States, action by the OTFI has meant that Islamic charities have been shut down, and individuals exercising their right to free speech through criticism of the Jewish state have been imprisoned. If the Israel Anti-Boycott Act succeeds in making its way through Congress, the OTFI model will presumably become the law of the land when it comes to curtailing free speech whenever Israel is involved. So you speak out against Israel, and it could be against the law at some point. Now, I haven't talked about this a lot because I didn't think it would get through, but they are pushing it. Israel Anti-Boycott Act. Look it up. The OTFI story is outrageous, but it is far from unique. There's a history of American Jews closely attached to Israel being promoted by powerful and cash-rich domestic lobbies to act on behalf of the Jewish state. To be sure, Jews who are Zionists are vastly overrepresented in all government agencies that have anything to do at all to do with the Middle East and one can reasonably argue that the Republican and Democratic parties are in the pockets of Jewish billionaires named Sheldon Adelson and Chaim Sabin. Neocons pushed the Iraq war, now target Iran. I don't think we all know that. So this individual is kind of interesting, David Friedman. American policy towards the Middle East is largely being managed by a small circle of Orthodox Jews working for presidential son-in-law Jared Kushner. One of them, David Friedman, is currently U.S. Ambassador to Israel. Friedman, a bankruptcy lawyer who has no diplomatic or foreign policy credentials, is a Zionist Jew who is also a supporter of the illegal settlements on the West Bank and a harsh critic of other Jews who in any way disagree with the Israeli government. He has contributed money to settlement construction, which would be illegal if OTFI were doing its job, and has consistently defended the settlers while condemning the Palestinians in speeches in Israel. He endlessly and ignorantly repeats Israeli government talking points and has tried to change the wording of State Department communications, seeking to delete the word occupied when describing Israel's control of the West Bank. His humanity does not extend beyond his Jewishness, defending the Israeli shooting of thousands of unarmed Gazan protesters and the bombing of schools, hospitals, and cultural centers. How he represents the United States and the citizens who are not dual nationals must be considered a mystery. And there he is speaking at an AIPAC convention. So I won't go through the rest of this, because it is a long article, but it's all about Israel's fifth column and how they've exercised control from inside the U.S. government. That's why we're not ever going to leave Syria. Not until World War III happens anyway. And it's also needless. It's also senseless. Other than just control and power. They are going to try and slam their new world order down our throats, whether we like it or not. And if they have to blow up the world first to do it, then that's what they're going to do. So all we can do is stay prayed up and prepped up, witness to people at all times when we get the opportunity, and just take care of our loved ones and those close to us. These are trying times, but we are more than conquerors through Christ Jesus, so don't be fearful. But I just wanted to give you a little history on why we have the situation going on today that we do. And it all goes back to Zionist Israel and the Vatican as well. But in this case, in these wars, Zionist Israel is pulling the strings. They pull Trump's strings, they pull our military strings, and we haven't owned our own military in quite some time. So there you go. God bless. Take care. Johnny Storm, don't speak.